Wusstest du, dass TK Maxx immer die besten Markendeals hat? Duftkerzen für alle, Sportoutfits, stylische Pieces für dein Zuhause, Designer-Handtasche, check, check, check. Bei TK Maxx findest du große Marken zu unglaublichen Preisen. Psst. Im Onlineshop auf tkmaxx.de kannst du rund um die Uhr die besten Markendeals shoppen. TK Maxx, immer der bessere Deal im Store und online.
Hackmans MMA Show mit Sebastian Hacke auf meinsportpodcast.de.
Hallo da draußen und herzlich willkommen zu einer neuen Ausgabe von Hackmans MMA Show auf meinsportpodcast.de. Auch heute ist wieder Oliver Kopp an meiner Seite und wir präsentieren euch den zweiten Teil des Interviews mit Ant Evans, der ja mächtig vom Stapel gelassen hat in der vergangenen Ausgabe. Ich habe es sehr genossen und Ausgabe 2 dieses Interviews ist sogar noch besser, das kann ich schon versprechen. Und Olli, wo habt ihr euch eigentlich kennengelernt?
Wir sind uns einander vorgestellt worden von Marshall Zelaznik, dem damaligen Chef der UFC hier in Europa. Und der meinte, hey, Olli, das hier ist Ant, ihr seid beide Wrestling-Fans, ihr werdet euch verstehen. Und so war es dann auch. Also wir haben natürlich sehr stark über die Vergangenheit gesprochen und was uns so in unseren Kindheitstagen an Wrestling fasziniert hat und warum viele dieser Sachen jetzt im Bereich der UFC angekommen sind, also diese Charaktere und wie man es vielleicht schaffen könnte. Wir haben uns oft darüber unterhalten, was wir denn tun könnten, um vielleicht diesen deutschen Fighter oder jenen englischen Fighter einfach ein bisschen mehr Profil zu geben. Du kannst halt auch vieles tun, an dem der Fighter gar nicht beteiligt ist, indem du einfach ein bisschen seine Geschichte erzählst und einfach mal Sachen schärfst, einfach Dinge rausgreifst auf sein Leben, und daran ist Ant halt spitze. Ich habe den kennengelernt, lieben gelernt, super Typ, Hunter für ins Feuer, ohne Scheiß. Der passt sowas von hier in den Podcast rein wie selten jemand anders.
Ja, ich möchte andere Dinge machen. Ich möchte nicht alles so machen wie andere Podcasts und MMA-Medien. Ich möchte ein bisschen meinen eigenen Weg finden und nicht nur analysieren und vorausblicken. Ich möchte solche Leute mit reinholen, die einen Mehrwert haben in meinen Augen. Und was für ein Verhältnis hast du zu Ant Evans? Ihr seid ja dicke, dicke Freunde, ne?
Wir sind privat sehr gut befreundet, auch seit vielen Jahren. Also wir waren schon zusammen im Urlaub und haben schon Neujahr zusammen eingeleitet, mehrfach. Es gibt wenige Leute, die mich so gut kennen wie er. Und es gibt auch wenige Leute, denen so viel Spaß macht, mich hochzuschießen. Und der hat schon so viele Sachen gebracht. Ich bin einmal fast nicht bei einer UFC reingekommen, weil er meinen Namen verändert hat. Oh. Also ich stand nicht als Oliver Kopp auf der Liste drauf, sondern als Oliver Knows. Weil es so ein kleiner Inside-Joke zwischen ihm und mir war. Ich hatte es aber nie gedacht, dass es eines Tages auf meinem Arbeitspass draufsteht. Er macht Sachen, die lustig sind, und manchmal geht er auch ein Stück über die Grenze raus, aber das macht ihn genauso sympathisch, weil du immer weißt, du wirst keinen langweiligen Tag erleben, wenn er in der Nähe ist.
Okay, dann lassen wir uns ein auf ein paar weitere Minuten mit dieser interessanten Persönlichkeit. Also, hier ist der zweite Teil des Interviews mit Ant Evans, dem ehemaligen PR-Chef der Ultimate Fighting Championship.
Wusstest du, dass TK Maxx immer die besten Markendeals hat? Duftkerzen für alle, Sportoutfits, stylische Pieces für dein Zuhause, Designer-Handtasche, check, check, check. Bei TK Maxx findest du große Marken zu unglaublichen Preisen. Psst. Im Onlineshop auf tkmaxx.de kannst du rund um die Uhr die besten Markendeals shoppen. TK Maxx, immer der bessere Deal im Store und online.
Well, switching topics. I know I'm stealing a lot of your time, but it's so interesting to listen to you, but We gotta talk about the Michael Bisping biography.
Let's sell some books. Come on.
Power to you, my friend. My favorite MMA book by far. I mean, how did the whole idea come about?
I mean, you say favorite. On the cover, we got a quote from God bless him, Errol Hawani. He says he read it. He's probably skimmed it. The best MMA book ever written. That's a little bit like being the tallest of the seven dwarves. Because MMA books are shit.
Also true. Also true.
Yeah, MMA books are crap. I've got a shelf full of them. Unless it's like Jonathan Snowden. He does good books. The Ken Shamrock one he did last year. Very recently. It was fantastic. Anyone who has any passing interest in the early UFCs, the early how MMA was created, and also pro wrestling, and just crazy stories of sex and drugs, and who isn't interested in those, should check out his book. But yeah, I mean, you know, the rest of the books are all crappy cash-ins, you know, and I'll say it. I mean, don't have to go there, but I will. But I thought the Dan Hardy book was really disappointing. You know, it basically got a guy who'd never seen an MMA fight before.
Well, I read that too. And in comparison to the Michael Bisping biography, it pales. It pales. I mean,
it was not good. It was not good. And the Ronda Rousey book was written by a sister who is a professional writer. You'd think that, you know, your sister, you'd open yourself up, but that was terrible. Terrible book.
I would say decent, but they could have done a better job, certainly. Certainly.
You're more diplomatic than me.
Well, there were some good... I mean, her story in itself is amazing. I mean, the death of her father, growing up with her mother, who's very difficult personality, living in her car. I mean, the book writes itself. If you're doing a halfway decent job as a writer, it writes itself. But I agree, they could have done a better job. But back to your book. I mean, I really want to compliment you on the good job you did. Take us through the writing process. Was it difficult to get a hold of him? And then,
yes, it's Michael Bisping.
Well, who could have thought? Who could have thought? I mean, I would give a finger to have him on my podcast. I mean, I think he's one of the, if not...
Oh, wait,
the...
I'll make that happen. He owes me 87 billion favors, so I can use one to get him
on. You're ribbing me, right? You're ribbing me.
No, I'll get him on.
Oh, my God. I love him as a commentator. I love him as a commentator. I think his story, I mean... Everything. He was in prison, for God's sake. Mm-hmm. He lost an eye. He still won the world championship. His family story. I mean, being lost in life in general. There's so many good things in this book for everyone.
To do a bad book with Michael Bisping. If I did a bad book with Michael Bisping, you know, I should never be allowed to touch a keyboard ever again.
I mean, I love the message he stands for. I mean, never give up, believe and achieve. I mean, that sounds odd, but it isn't, because it's true when he tells you. And also with a strong family behind you, anything's possible. That's something I believe in. And it's basically, I don't want to take any words out of your mouth. Just ramble on and I'll listen.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, the book came about is his agent sold the rights, you know, and I actually got a DM on Twitter from a writer I know a little bit, who actually does really good books, saying, hey, could you put a my agent, his agent, this writer has got me up for the Michael Bisping autobiography. I'd really love to do it. Could you have a word with Mike? And I'm like, what the fuck is this? So I called Mike up, and I'm pretty, I'm very seldom lose my temper with him. So, you know, that's one of the reasons with Mike is like when he's mad and he's bouncing off the walls, I'm like, yeah. I just kind of let it wash over me. And then he's calmed down. He goes, oh, I'm sorry for that. I'm like, yeah, no, we got there real quick. But I was like, hey, what the fuck, dude? It's like, some guy you've never met is doing your book. I don't know what you're talking about. So I read it out. He goes, let me call my agent. So Mike calls back and he goes, yeah. So apparently he sold the rights to my autobiography and they're looking for writers. He goes, I want to do it with you. He goes, I'm telling him I'm going to do it with you. Because that's what we'd always said, that, you know, one day we'd do a book together. And Mike is a pretty loyal guy. If he considers you a friend, and if you've done right by him. Like, he is a loyal guy. When I got laid off by the UFC, he called me and goes, do you need money? You know, straight away. I probably embarrassed him to saying that, but he did. I was like, no, dude, we're good, honestly. Thanks.
That's so cool. That's so cool.
Yeah, he's a real loyal guy.
My impression. When I'm reading this book, I get the impression that this is a guy who honors family, who honors his friends, and who doesn't surround himself with phonies and fakes, you know? I think he likes real people.
Yes, exactly, exactly. And anyway, true to his word, he was. You know, he goes, "I want to do it with him." So I'm on the. I have a phone call, the email a little bit, I'm like emailing back with Forth. I think with. Can't remember who it was. I think it's basically Penguin in the UK. and I was like, "Listen, let me just say it out loud." As like, you probably have Ebury Press. There you go. Is it imprint of Penguin? I was like, you probably have every celebrity, whoever does a book with you. They always say, "Oh, I've got a brother who's a bit of a writer," or you know what, my niece. She's really good with words. She could write it. And I was like, you're like, holy shit, we're going to go through this again. Michael Bisping's got a buddy who can write. What the hell are you going to? I was like, look, I won't bore you with my credentials. It's like, I've been published. I've done this, this, and this. I've written a little bit for television. I assure you I'm a competent enough writer. Never written a book. And I'm not underestimating that. Let me write you one chapter. If you think it's shit, just say so, and I will tell Mike, "Hey, buddy, I appreciate it, but I just don't know if I can write a full book," or I'll tell him I'm too busy, and you can move on. I was like, does that sound fair? And I could just tell, it was a conference call, I could just tell that the air went, like a sigh, like, okay. So I did a chapter, and I did the chapter pretty much word for word what ended up in the book about him fighting Jorge Rivera, UFC 127, I think it was.
That's an amazing chapter.
Sydney. Yeah, so thank you. So they thought so too. They're like, yeah, you can do it. We like this. We like where this is going. So, yeah, said about it, you know, went from there. Now, you mentioned them going to prison. Now, I knew that he'd been to prison. He told me very, very, very early on, but I don't think anyone at the UFC knew it. Obviously, Dana.
I, as a fan, didn't know until a few years ago.
Yeah, been kept absolutely secret. The day they were like, "Yeah, we love you, this first chapter, you know, you do it." I called Mike. I was like, we were talking about what we're going to do. And Mike goes, "And I'm going to tell the story in this and about me going to prison." I was like, "What? Really?" He goes, "Yeah." He goes, "Yeah, this is going to be an honest book." He goes, "I want to show people, like, you can be down and out. You can be going in the wrong direction. You can take a chance on life again." I was like, "Really? You want to? You sure?" He goes, "Yes." So that's one of the first things you wrote about him, you know, going to prison, when he was a young rascal.
Yeah.
Because he said, like, he's more mature now. Everyone says he's easier to work with than he used to be.
Fatherhood changes us all, right?
Yeah, yeah, but he's still exactly the same guy. He's still, you know, he loves being Michael Bisping. He doesn't want to stop being Michael Bisping, I assure you. Every day he's like, "Oh, great, I get to be Michael Bisping again." you know, so, but we put that in about him, you know. Yeah, and again, like, you know, how he hasn't done a movie deal, I don't know. Or a mini series based on his crazy life.
So charismatic, the guy. I mean, the Jorge Rivera chapter, for those who haven't read the book yet, shame on you for once. But secondly, I mean, it's so cool. It's such a cool story because Jorge Rivera was talking all this trash with his corner man in his camp, and Bisping really shut him up, and he shut him up for good. So it's a really nice chapter. Please, guys, if you're listening to this podcast, buy the book and read the chapter.
I don't know if you saw on Twitter. Jorge Rivera's one of these coaches and the guys who was one of the sponsors from Ranger Up, and they were the one producing these videos, you know, like basically taking the piss out of Mike.
Yeah.
Mike and me both felt they were kind of racist against English people.
Interesting.
That's why Mike went there. And I repeated that on Twitter a couple of weeks ago, and they're like, "How can you say it's racist?" I'm like, "Whoa, whoa, whoa!" You know, and look, you know, I was like, "I'm about to get into trouble here," because, you know, the whole race debate is going on in the whole world now, and obviously there's a big difference between making fun of someone who's a successful athlete who's white and other people who get racism. But as I pointed out, if you're mocking someone for the way they talk, their cultural heritage, and using cultural stereotypes to make fun of them, what do you call that? There's a word for that, and that begins with R.
Rude? You know? Rude?
No. Well, it's definitely rude. It's definitely rude. Yeah. But yeah, so that was another one that was just, you know, just nuclear heat. Like, just, they were both just chomping at the bit to get after each other. It was like so deeply personal. And that's one of the things where Jorge Rivera had asked, who's a really good guy, by the way, but he and his manager had asked Joe Silva, the UFC matchmaker, for that fight. Jorge was 3-3 going into that in his last six. He'd won his last three, but before that, he'd lost three, I think. And Mike was like, just uninterested. It's like, oh my God, why can't I fight Rich Franklin or, you know, I think it was Thiago Santos or someone like that he wanted to fight. Nate Marquardt, you know, someone ahead of me. Like, why this stiff? You know, why? You know, he wasn't interested. But Rivera said, promised Joe Silva's like, we will promote the heck out of this. And that's what they did, you know. So it went from like, they might have got a very underwhelmed, undermotivated Michael Bisping. Instead, they got a insanely motivated, inspired Michael Bisping, who just, you know, absolutely tore him apart in that fight.
Yeah. Incredible insight.
It wasn't pretty.
I'll
tell you this. I'd always been very friendly with the Ranger Up people and with Jorge as well, but none of them spoke with me for like 3 years after I took Mike's side in this whole Spitgate thing.
Yes. Yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah, I mean, look, play dumb games, get dumb prizes.
I have to remember that. I have to write that down. I don't know. I've already stolen so much time from you, and I appreciate it very much. I just wanted to let you know. But I know that there's a story we have to get into. A mouse whispered it to me. A mouse called Oliver, and
yes, I'm sure.
Just to cut to the chase, what is it like to coordinate interviews with Mark Coleman?
Oh, fuck's sake. I know what. Yeah, you want dick jokes? Okay.
A good story. I want a good story.
We've reached the dick joke part of the podcast, haven't we? Yeah, that was at UFC 93 as well. Mark Coleman, God bless him. God bless him. Do you want me to take this from the top, so to speak?
Let us in on the party.
That was not a party, dude. Not a party.
I don't know anything.
You were the first person I told. I think I was like, I was at the bar afterwards, you know, taking a stiff drink, shaking afterwards. You know, you were the first person I told. Yeah, so
very,
yeah, thank
stiff.
You. Yeah. So I was chasing Mark Coleman, God bless him, all day to get him on the phone with Dave Meltzer, who was writing for Yahoo. And he just wouldn't. You know, oh, yeah, I've got to go try. Oh, come back in there. What time is it again? Well, you said noon. Yeah, noon, Meltzer's time. He's in L.A. We're in Dublin. I'm going to go train. Be back in. He didn't go train. He went to eat. I've got to let my lunch go down. I've got to let this go. It was just like getting further and further. And it's like I had to get this done to give Meltzer time to write it. So we had a story on Yahoo about the co-main event of our pay-per-view. So, you know, I'm now in stalker mode, which is a mode that all PR people have to keep in reserve, you know. And I wouldn't have. So I'm basically waiting outside the workout room in the hotel, and I'm just going to not let him leave my sight now. And at some point, I'm going to put my phone in this man's hand, and he's going to talk to Dave Meltzer. If it's the last thing I do on earth. Anyway, he trains for like an hour or two. I thought he was going to go hit pads. And he did like this drilling. He's covered in sweat. He comes out. He walks out the room. Oh, we're doing this now? And I'm like, well, it's like fucking 10 o'clock at night. I hope so, buddy. You know? Because come to my room. We'll do it from there. All right. and he's just wearing MMA gear. He's got ham wraps on. He's stripped to the waist. He's just, I think he's like dead. He was like probably the age I am now, like 44, but he's just like just ripped to shreds. He's sweating. Yeah, like
he's a physical specimen.
You know how those like uber in shape people just sweat buckets? You think, well, how much water do you contain in within your being? You're just sweating and sweating and sweating. So I'm in the elevator with him, going back to his room. He's barefoot, just water is just pouring off him, and congealing on the floor of this elevator. Get into his room, and it's like, I don't know if you've ever been into a fighter's hotel room fight week. It just looked like I'm going to describe it as like, looks like somebody planted a bomb in a tap out store. There's just, rash guards up the place. There's pads everywhere. It
reeks of awesomeness.
It reeked, and it wasn't awesome. It reeked of like sweat from workouts that happened in the 1970s. It was just, ugh. And he goes, I'm going to go shower. And I'm like, well, that's a good idea. So there's nowhere for me to sit because the chair's just covered in all this stuff, and wet. He threw his wet stuff on the ground, and like, so basically, like, find a little space on this edge of the bed. I'm texting Dave Meltzer, hey buddy, another 10 minutes. He's just gonna go take a shower, and I hear the shower going. I'm just texting him like, hey, 5 minutes, cool. Yep, okay. Ask him about this, cool. And as I'm looking kind of down at my phone, my BlackBerry Bold, I love that phone. BlackBerry should never gone out of existence. They're much better than iPhones. Don't ever let anyone tell you any different. I love that phone. And I see a pair of legs there, and they're still wet. And I look up, and they're like, just like this inches away from my face is this dude's cock. He's naked. He's naked and dripping wet. There's no towel around. It's like, I take a shower. He goes, oh, I've took a shower. Do you want to dry? He goes, no, I air dry. Which is a thing I didn't know existed.
Me neither.
All right. It's Dublin. It's January. This probably isn't a good idea for an athlete to air dry.
And towels are free.
And towels and hotels are free. And I'm like, okay. I said, you got time to dry off. He goes, oh, no, you've been telling me all day this is an important interview. I'm like, yeah, dude, but fucking, 2 minutes to dry off and put some fucking clothes on. We got that time. We got time for that. I'll make time for that. And, he's like, we'll call him. So I called him out. So I was like, hey, yeah, Mark's going to be another couple of minutes. And like Mark then goes, no, I said I'll do it now. And he takes my phone. Okay. Hey, Dave, how you doing? Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm doing it. And he starts pacing up and down. So I'm sat there on the bed, right? This ain't a suite. It's just a hotel room, yeah? So he's pacing. I'm sitting on the bed, and there's about a meter's space before you get to the wall and where the TV's on. A naked Mark Coleman is pacing up and down in front of me. There's nothing for, like, what do people do when they're in an uncomfortable situation? Well, they pull out their phone, yeah? And they pretend to do something on their phone so they don't have to look at it.
But you didn't have a phone.
The whole problem is, naked Mark Coleman's got my fucking phone. And Dave Meltzer does not do short interviews. It sounded like 20 minutes before they even mentioned that he had a UFC fight in 3 days. And then it fucking... You ever seen like a car crash or been in a car crash or like some sort of horrific accident? It like time slows down. You know what I'm talking about?
It's like seconds go like tick, tick.
Yes. So he's scratching his balls, yeah? He's scratching his balls.
Well.
And by the way, Mark Coleman's balls are way bigger than you would expect for a guy who fought in Pride for so long. Way bigger.
He's a courageous guy, so it makes sense.
Yeah. So he's scratching them, and then the hand he's just scratched his balls with goes up. I'm like, oh, no, you're not. He swaps hands of the phone. So now the scrotum juice is on my phone. My beloved BlackBerry Bold.
Oh, my God.
And this just goes on forever. This just, I mean, it just this. Like, it's not like there's no magazines I could read. It's like, you know, I'm like, you know what? I'm about to just leave my phone here. Well, and I think, shit, no, because then I've got to call Marshall, you know, at such and such, and I've got interviews at 6 a.m. Finally, I'm like, something's got to happen here. So I just kind of leap up, say, grab a phone, go, hey, Dave, that's all he's got time for, thanks, and I'm out the fucking door, you know. And that's when I want to go downstairs, and I want some, like, wipes for my phone, like something like industrial strength, like acid.
Pure alcohol.
Yeah. Give me the 70% proof vodka, for God's sake, you know. And that's when I see you all in, tell you what just went on. It was just, yeah. And like, and then you see fans who are like, oh, you've got my dream job. I was like, you go up there and fucking talk to Naked Mark Coleman.
This is the number one story I remember from that trip to Ireland. Number two probably would be Phil Baroni, of all people, acting as a peacemaker when an Irish fan tried to challenge Pat Barry to a leg kicking contest.
Ooh, yes. Bad idea. Bad
that
idea.
That was before Pat Barry ever fought in the UFC.
Yes.
So, yeah. But that story is my favorite of all time. Yours.
Yeah, it was something. It was something.
Amazing. All those characters, I mean, to get to know all those characters, you mentioned Sakuraba, for example. I mean, he has to be the character of characters, right?
Uh-huh. And hasn't changed.
He still competes, for those who don't know, he still competes in those quintet matches.
Yeah, he does, yeah. Yeah, still 53 years old, and yeah. I don't know, you got to worry about, you know, wonder how well he did out of, you know, I mean, they were paying Hoist Gracie $2 million, you know, sort of 22 years ago, whenever it was now,
yeah,
to fight. And he was getting, I mean, I heard he got paid as little as $30,000, and that his managers and...
Really?
Yeah, Takada and all those people were just bleeding him dry, and he was getting next to nothing. Yeah.
Oh, that's so sad. I mean, he has so much to offer. I mean, the history, I mean, the Gracie killer, being the guy who smokes backstage for of all things. I mean, that's so incredible. That's unheard of. I mean, this generation now is so professional. Like you said, everybody's training everything. Everybody's kind of the complete total package. And there's a guy backstage with his wrapped up knees, cauliflower ears, and he's smoking cigarettes like 15 minutes before a fight. That's incredible.
Yeah, it is. And it's, you mentioned, like, kind of touched on it there, like, the, it's not just the modern fans who don't know all this kind of stuff. It's the modern MMA journalists, you know, the next wave. I mean, Dan Tom, who writes for MMA Junkie, you know, has a really good YouTube channel too. He's really, really good analyst and stuff. But I had to call him up. He was talking a couple of, when ESPN did that wretched Bruce Lee documentary, just basically filleting the guy and repeating all this bullshit about Bruce Lee. And he was like, well, you know, he's the closest thing, you know, Asian Americans have to, you know, an MMA hero. I'm like, isn't Sakuraba a little closer? What the fuck are you talking about? I was like, you're saying Bruce Lee's been dead for 50 years in exactly one fight ever, you know, an amateur boxing match? You're saying he deserves an ESPN documentary ahead, you know, as a mixed martial arts icon, and Sakuraba doesn't? That's absurd to me.
Well, never underestimate the reach of movies, right? I mean, real sports and movies have a different value to some people. I mean, there's people out there who think that Steven Seagal is a badass, and that's debatable.
yes, exactly. You know, but that's like one of the part of the important things when I did, and the me and Mike wanted to tell. We wanted to talk about the Cage Warriors, Cage Rage, and that part of the early development of MMA in the UK, because, you know, Mike said, like, if we don't put it in this book, it's never going to be any other book.
And this was those were some good chapters. I mean, it was a fight for fight, opponent for opponent, detailed description of every fight. That's what I liked. I mean, I like reading long books. I mean, if you're telling me about your life, I want you to use details. I want to be able to smell the arena and to see through your eyes. And I think because of the detailed descriptions and the fact that you guys took time for every chapter, for every period of his life, it provided tremendous value for the book as a whole. I really have to compliment you again on the doing a great job.
I appreciate that, especially seeing as one of the reviews was like, there was too much about fighting in this book.
Well, he's a fighter.
He's a fucking fighter.
Guys, what are you expecting? I mean, he's a fighter. Well, I mean...
Yeah. Who the fuck was that moron?
I mean, I bought the book twice because I bought it as an audiobook. And
oh,
I bought,
bless you. We appreciate you.
And I bought the actual book because it's a good book. It's really a good book. I can't stress this enough. I listened to it twice and I've read it once. I ride a lot in my car because of professional reasons, of course. And I listened to it twice and I can only say, guys, buy the book. do you have
buy it twice?
Buy it twice, like me. Do you have any current projects within the MMA community?
I do. I consult with a bunch of different MMA companies. There's one in particular that's going to have an announcement next week that I can't talk about right now, unfortunately.
No problem.
And I'm writing another book. Second MMA book, which because it's not Michael Bisping and it's just gonna be my name rather than his, it will sell nothing like the amount of copies, unless I can get Mike to agree to, you know, do a foreword or something like that, which I'm sure he will. But I'm writing a book called Fightography, which is going to be inside the 20 greatest MMA fights of all time.
Nice.
Got a lot of, one of them is full chapter on the Gracies versus Sakuraba.
Ah, it's such a great rivalry.
Yeah, yeah. Spoke to some people. I can't use their names because they're worried about the Yakuza. Uh-huh. You know, and that's how I know how little Sakuraba got paid for that fight.
There's a Sakuraba documentary on Fight Pass. I mean, I watch so much stuff on MMA and wrestling. I don't sleep for your explanation. That's such an interesting topic. But go on. Just wanted to say that.
No. So yeah, I mean, I'm working on that slowly but surely.
Amazing. Which other fights will be portrayed in that book?
Some of the obvious ones.
Son and Silva.
Bisping Silva, obviously will be in. We have access to both of them.
Such a dramatic fight too.
A few that you wouldn't have thought, like Frank Mir versus Ian Freeman.
Nice.
Which is just got a story. If that fight took place now with that backstory, it would be all over ESPN. Everywhere. So, in a nutshell, Frank Mir is the undefeated
heavyweight champion of the world.
Yeah. He's a fight away from fighting for the title. He's the biggest, youngest, baddest jiu-jitsu submission machine they'd ever seen. UFC is basically, oh my god, we've got a guy who's charismatic, who can talk shit. You know, good looking dude. You know, he's only 23, I think he was at the time. And he was basically one fight away from the title and it's like, we're doing a show in England for the first time. Let's get an English guy and we'll just have Frank annihilate him. Well, the guy they had was Ian Freeman.
The machine.
Who has, you know, one of those backstories that just defies belief. You know, he was mugged as a teenager, you know, almost kicked to death. Completely random. One of those horrific, like, makes no sense. Just people just sat on him and just continued to beat him for almost an hour, almost kicked him to death. And his dad was a former boxer. And after a year of Ian not leaving the house, wasn't suicidal, but also didn't care about life. Didn't see the point in any life. So he became a boxer for his dad in City. He boxed, got his confidence, got into MMA. He's at the tail end of his career, but then he gets to finally get the chance to fight in the UFC. And he's training with Josh Barnett. Like, you know, this is his like World Cup final. Now, if he beats Frank Mir, he's done something in his career because he's at the tail end of it. He's old.
It was in his mid-30s, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and he was really, you know, he was a pumped up light heavyweight. He was no business fighting at heavyweight. He's a tiny guy, really.
Yeah.
And then he's having the best career of his camp and all this. He's spent all this money to go to America, and he gets a call from home like, your dad's got weeks to live.
Right.
Yeah, so he goes home, and his dad's hanging on, but he's like, I'm going to call the UFC now and tell him I can't do this fight, can't do it. And his mum followed him out the room and says, like, Ian, listen, your dad won't say it, but he's so proud of you. He's so proud. It's like, you've taken what he did in boxing, and you've gone way past it. It's like, this is your coming out party. This is what you work for. You know, you've been fighting in Japan and Europe and all that, and no one ever saw you. Now it's on Sky Sports in the UK, which is kind of like the ESPN of the UK, I guess. It's like, you're getting all this national press. Your dad's going to pass. He said, but give him the best going away present ever.
Oh my God.
To London, beat him up, dedicate the win to your dad.
I'm having goosebumps right now.
Yeah, and that's what he did. I mean, he walks with a limp. You know, Mia got him in a heel hook that Ian told me, and it's going to be in the book, is like, any other fight I would have tapped, but I just wouldn't. I just absolutely wouldn't. He would literally have had to have killed me before it would have stopped, and he just punched the fight out of Mia and gets backstage and is going to call his dad to say, Dad, I did it. I won. And that's when his trainer says, your dad died last night.
Oh my God.
His dying wishes, do not tell Ian until after the fight.
Incredible story.
Yeah, so stuff like that, which, you know, if that happened now, that would be like, oh my God, this unbelievable, heartbreaking story. You know, like, just what, you know,
talk
what
about,
you know, the human experience of that. But because it happened in 2002, before anyone was really covering MMA, it's just like this forgotten story that only a handful of people know. So I, you know, if I can get, you know, 100 people to buy this book and know that story, I think I'd be doing MMA a service.
Hmm. But he didn't fight for the UFC a lot. I think he lost to Arlovski. That's what I can remember. But he had at least one more fight, I think, which he won, or was it a draw? I can't.
He lost to Arlovski 6 months later. He just, you know, and if he won that, he would have fought for the UFC title. But he was just wasn't over his dad dying, and then he.
Really?
Basically fought in Cage Rage off and on for the next decade, winning Cage Rage titles. But, you know, that was the zenith. And, you know, I got him on record saying, it was like, on that day, he thinks he would have been a problem for Randy Couture, Brock Lesnar, Francis Ngannou, anyone, you know, just because his whole life had boiled down to this moment.
When I hear a fighter's name, I mean, thousands of informations pop up in my head, because that's what I do all day. I remember the horrible knockout against Melvin Manhoef, but
yes,
I think that must have been Cage Rage.
Yes, it was.
Yeah. Amazing story. And thank you for bringing it up. It's quite an emotional story. Speaking of fighters from the generations before, Misha Tate is back. Good idea,
yes.
Bad idea? What do you think?
Yeah, she's definitely got something to offer. She was, you know, fighting, and she, no one's explained this better than she's done herself. You know, I'm a huge Misha Tate fan, and I consider her a friend. She was in, you know, she was in a relationship now with a trainer who didn't, and things were just going badly in the train and the relationship, and it just soured her on all of MMA. And she, you know, this isn't a thing. This isn't a job you can phone in for a few weeks while you saw.
No, certainly not.
Whatever domestic problems you have, you can't phone this job in. You know, fighting. You know. It does take. I mean, you really, psychology, just to do it, they have to do so much psychologically to get themselves to the point where they can get in there and do what they do. And that's why, you know, when you know, like, so like, you hear like a fighter did this or a fighter did that. It's like, yeah, but they're different types of people. You can't judge them, you know, especially when they're active and especially during fight week. You know, like, so-and-so was rude to a fan. Oh, yeah, I get it. You know, too bad for the fan. That's not good to hear, but they're starving themselves. They're, you know, basically
they're in a special place.
Yeah, yeah. They're transforming their body and their emotions and their mind in order to do this crazy thing they're about to do, you know? So, yeah, I mean, Misha, if she thinks she can do that again, become that version of herself again, and you know, she knows herself better than we do, I definitely think she's got a lot to offer. I don't think she can beat Amanda Nunes.
No.
Which is obviously a stated goal.
Nunes is a different animal.
I mean,
she's so dominant, and I love her story. I mean, the way she lived her life, she's a role model in my eyes. I have two daughters. I think she's a total role model.
Yeah,
she lives her life. She lives her life the way she wants it to live, and she's so successful, and she's so dominant. I think she's on another planet than the others. But still, I agree. I think Misha Tate can be competitive in this division if you give her the right matchups, which the UFC is not always good at when it comes to legends, quote unquote. But yeah, let's see. I mean, I'm intrigued. Will you watch the Ben Askren versus Jake Paul boxing match?
Probably not. You know, if I got would I watch it if I for free? Probably. Probably not. I mean, Ben can't box.
There's this meme out there.
Yeah.
Like MMA fans are discussing who to send against Jake Paul, and one says send the wrestler, and all the others like bow their heads in disappointment.
The wrestler with one hip, and Jake Paul is, I just find him nauseating. he doesn't have to be a good boxer. He just has to be fairly good at being younger and healthier, which he's gonna do.
And being more explosive, you know?
Yeah, he's bigger, a lot younger, and he's healthy. And you know what? I don't get the fascination with him and people like him, this YouTube thing. But
we're too old for that, I think. We're in our 40s.
Yeah.
We're in our 40s.
Yeah. Look, my 7-year-old, I can't get him to watch TV. He just wants to watch YouTube of, you know, man babies playing video games and squealing while they're doing it. I was like, I don't get it. But that's okay. You know,
well,
but
it is what it is.
Horrified that I'd like this MMA stuff. Well, you know, I was like, why are you wasting your life on this? You could be writing about something interesting rather than this human cop fighting shit. That's okay. But
it's your passion.
This is the real disruptor. This is the I don't think anyone's really paying attention. This is the real disruptor, this stuff. Anderson Silva's boxing Chavez Jr.
Yeah.
Roy Jones, Mike Tyson. These are athletes, you know, basically going into business with streaming platforms, putting a dream fight together and take it, you know, they're making bucks. I mean, this is what John Jones should do right now.
Yeah, that's another topic I wanted to get into with you. I don't know how much time you have left. I don't want to bother you, but
well, I don't know how much time your listeners got left. They probably tuned out by now.
It's my podcast. It's my podcast. I'm deciding how long it goes. Because you had an interesting tweet. By the way, where can listeners find you?
They can find me on Twitter, usually, Ant Evans MMA.
Ant Evans MMA. Follow the guy. You tweeted out, John is Ali to Francis Foreman.
Yeah.
I don't know if I agree, and I don't know how Oliver feels about it, but please explain.
John Jones will think of a way to beat Francis Ngannou.
You're sure?
Just like, yes. Yeah, I'd bet a lot of money on it.
Well, it's a take that opens discussions, but I don't know if there are any parallels within the John Jones Muhammad Ali area. I think.
Well, look. I mean, in terms of some people think that. I can paint. Even like you can compare anything to anything, but Ngannou is a terrifying huge, scary guy who people are increasingly beat before they get into the octagon with.
I call that the Tyson factor. If you look in his eyes and if you see the stature, UFC on UFC's Instagram, there was this amazing picture. Like the photographer was taking a photo between Stipe's legs towards the opposing corner where Ngannou was standing, right? Like an upper body shot, thighs up, and he looks like a Greek statue. I mean, he looks like he's carved out of stone, and he is this terrifying look. He's 6'4", he's 260, I mean, no body fat, and he has the scary punching power. I agree. I think a lot of fighters lose the fight right then when the horn hasn't tooted yet. I mean, he's just so intimidating.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it just, it's the... I mean, the fact that Stipe landed more punches and he didn't land many, I think he landed like 11 than the last four Ngannou opponents combined, shows that no one's trying to hit him, because to hit him, you open yourself up to be hit by this guy. That is a huge advantage when somebody won't do their best. People are going in to fight him who are not going to do their best, because doing their best will open them up for the worst of what can happen to them. And it's the same with Amanda Nunes. She scares the shit out of her opponents too.
I mean, the way she disposed of Cyborg. If you're, I don't care who you are, if you see that, and there's not an ounce, a small percentage within you that says, she's scary, you probably are a rock. I mean, that has to impress you, you know?
Yeah. But I think John will think of something. John's the best mixed martial artist of all time by a country mile, by an insane amount. He will find a way of beating him. He will probably have several ways of beating him. Now, at any given moment, if Ngannou hits him with one of his better, you know, anything upwards of 85% power,
you're toast.
John could get knocked out. He really could.
I mean, his punches are nuclear bombs. I mean, there's no other way to describe it.
But, you know, look, Stipe did survive the first fight.
Which was against a different Ngannou.
Yeah, well, he was still hitting. He doesn't hit harder now than he did 3 years ago.
But he hits more technical. He's more patient. His shot selection has become so much better. I mean,
Still wild. I mean,
it's wild, but he takes breaks. Now he takes breaks, and back
he
then,
does. Well, that's the thing. He was just
swarming people back then. Now he takes breaks. If he sees that he can't take you away, he takes 20, 30 seconds, and then he goes in again for the kill. But
you've noticed, and I've noticed that he takes breaks.
Yes,
John Jones will have noticed that a long time before we did, and he will know what to do during those breaks.
It's a cool opinion, and I appreciate that you're being so honest about different topics, because that makes for a great conversation. And well, let's see. I mean, that would be if it takes place. That's another question. Mm-hmm. Will it take place?
It doesn't look good, does it?
No, not at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, look, no one's really talking about this in the media. How can UFC say they have the best year ever and also not want to put the biggest fight they can on? Well, the information's out there. The UFC was bought, but with leveraged debt, and they're about to leverage even more money to buy the other 49% of it out. That debt has interest. You have payments you have to make. So it doesn't matter how much they're making. It's how much money do WME, Endeavor, whatever they're called these days, how much do they have to pay out?
I think it's Endeavor.
So I know it's Endeavor. I'm just being facetious. if they've got to pay this, they've got a certain amount, and the information's out there, how much they have to pay out each month, including interest, and when the loan, all the loans are due, and all this. So it's not Lorenzo and Dana and Frank Fertitta, you know, in a room anymore saying, okay, we'll do this. It doesn't work like that anymore, unfortunately. So the reality is like the UFC is making more money now, churning out show after show after show after show, and they don't necessarily, they're doing just absolutely fantastic. You know, best year ever last year. You know, I believe Dana when he says that. Doing some very good fights, a lot of average fights, and a couple of events. You go, well, I don't know who these people are. You know, even allowing for COVID and, you know, fight cancellations, and it's hard to get international fighters into the country, etc. You know, still doing a few cards. Like, I there's nothing on here that interests me. But guess what? That is what the people who are paying the money, ESPN, are asking for. So the UFC is delivering. They don't need to pay John Jones $20 million. They're going to do just fine this year without that fight. Whereas it would have been a transformative to have that fight 3 years, 5 years ago.
There's not the pay-per-view pressure, right?
No, exactly. And that's the reality, you know?
But you get paid the same amount regardless of what you put on the card. That's a really good position to be in right now in the pandemic.
Yeah.
That's my biggest criticism about our generation, the way it is when we're speaking of media consumption in general, because everybody wants content. I hate this word, content. Mm. I want quality.
Yes.
I'd watch the UFC 10 times or 15 times a year if you promise me that there's 5 fights on each card where I know each fighter, where I know the background story, where I know the personality, where I know weaknesses and strengths. That's what I'm missing a bit. Now that you say it, I can identify this problem that I have. I mean, and it's a luxury problem because I love watching fights and I love doing the commentary. But it's really now that we're discussing it, I actually know what my problem is with this generation.
Yeah, well, I don't know. It's the generation. It's as much as it is. This is what this generation of media executives have identified will make them more money, and which in followers will make the UFC, WWE more money. They do want content. They want hours and hours. How many hundreds, how many thousands of hours of content?
But who says how good these hundreds of hours of content are? I mean, who?
Well, really no one.
Exactly. That's my problem. Just because it's a huge amount of content doesn't mean that I will enjoy watching this content. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But nobody cares. Nobody cares. That's the problem.
Yeah.
They want to fill a certain number of hours at as little price as they can get away with. And UFC is super cheap programming for ESPN compared to whatever else they pay money for. So
yeah.
Even though it's a huge amount of money they're paying for the UFC programming every year, it still isn't that much to ESPN, to Disney, for the amount of programming time they're filling every year.
Interesting.
Yeah. And it goes even deeper than that. The ESPN Plus is a success because of the UFC. So it is
right. Working. Right.
So not only are UFC getting the signals from ESPN, this is what we want. ESPN is getting signals from the subscribers and potential subscribers that this is what they want.
Yeah.
So they're going to just do more and more and more of it. Now, and I don't know the levers that fans who want to see this Jones-Nagano fight, or I should say Nagano-Jones fight, what levers do they have now to apply – well, not even apply pressure, but show ESPN, show UFC. It's like, no, we want this. We're prepared to pay for this. I don't know how they do that because they're already buying a lot of UFC pay-per-views, they're already subscribing to ESPN. So, you know, they're going to tweet about it. I mean, Twitter means nothing. You know, they're going to get it trending and, you know, I don't know if that will make a difference either. You know, I mean, look, the UFC knows full well that this will be the biggest fight they can put on this year, especially if they lean into it and you know, really promote it very, very hard, like they did with Conor McGregor, and you know, and take him on a big tour, and you know, do a big press conference with a you know, amazing backdrops of New York City, the Brooklyn Bridge, like they did with Nate Diaz and Jorge Masvidal. They lean into this could easily be the biggest pay-per-view they've ever done.
Nate Diaz will fight Leon Edwards in May. Let's not forget that.
Yeah. Well, I might forget it. I'm not that interested in Leon Edwards fights. And I'm, you know, Nate Diaz, I love Nate. He's fantastic. Love working with him. He's in good fights, but yeah, what a genius to get this amount of out the talent he's got. You know, he's a very, very good fighter. Very, very good. He's not a world championship level fighter.
But he has a story. He's a character.
You
can put your hooks in.
Yeah, yeah. And Nate, the crazy thing is, I used to go to Nate to get Nick to show up. But Nate identifies like, well, everybody thinks my brother's this crazy guy. You know, like Nick is just like a laid back guy who just, you know, he's just a sweet, just tight with Nick Diaz for a second. This is when he fought GSP up in Toronto. I don't forget which number it was. But, you know, huge fight. It is cold as hell up there. Well, hell's not cold. If hell was cold rather than hot, it'd be the hell of cold. It was just freezing up there. And, you know, Nick being Nick is just wandering around in jeans, sneakers, and a black T-shirt. And the bus to take us back to the hotel wasn't there. And the hotel is only like 3/4 mile away. He goes, oh, that's so cool, dude. And I'm like trying to get a taxi and trying to get something, some transport arranged because this bus is stuck in traffic or some nonsense. And he's like, and don't trouble yourself. I'll walk. I was like, Nick, you will not walk, but it's like Siberian temperatures for 3/4 mile, 3 days before the biggest fight in UFC history. No, you will not. And he's like, I don't want to cause anyone any trouble. And that's Nick Diaz. Amazing. That's who he is.
Amazing. Who would have thought?
Yeah, yeah. You know, when he met my wife, then my girlfriend, like, you know, he put me over to her, and you know, he's the coolest guy. You know, you're so lucky to be with him. You know, he's just the best. He's just the best. But you know, Nick identified that what people wanted from a Diaz brother was this swaggering, swashbuckling, don't give a shit
gangster type attitude.
He's like, oh, well, that ain't Nick. But I can be that for you. And he leaned into that. You know, he kind of expanded that part of his personality and depressed, you know, the other stuff, the nicer side of him, you know, the person he is day to day. He goes, oh, that's what you want. I'll give you some of that. Cool. And look at the success he's had.
Yeah.
And that's dropping in and out. I mean, basically, like, look, you know, I don't think Jorge Masvidal is a very good, in a particularly good fighter. You know, he's definitely a top 8 fighter.
He's a character.
Certainly a character. If anyone's fucked the gimmick up, it's him. I don't know, people looking for a Cuban American to support a white supremacist like he did, you know, become a Donald Trump bootlicker. I just was looking at that going, well, there goes the gimmick, buddy. We'll see how he does from now on. Now he's kind of outed himself as an imbecile like that, and you know, the anti-vax and anti-COVID, you know, gobbledygook his tweets. I don't think that was really the character that people thought they were getting from him.
Let's say, I mean, MMA fighters having strong political opinions does not work out well in general.
No. Especially when it's so against what you're supposed to be. I mean, this with Dan Hardy, you know, when he was the outlaw, like, he actually became pals with Lorenzo Fertitta and worked out in Lorenzo's private gym. And I was like, oh, Dan, you probably shouldn't be tweeting that stuff. I was like, you're the outlaw, yeah? I was like...
That's more of a company, man.
not the boss's friend, you know? Like, no, the boss's friend ain't cool, you know?
Exactly. Not too renegade-ish.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many topics. I mean... I wanted to talk about Overeem, who's a free agent now, and a lot of fantasy booking we could do, like Overeem versus Fader and stuff. But I think you've brought so much value and you've spent so much time for this podcast interview. I just want to let you go now. But it was mega, mega interesting. It was so cool to pick your brain a bit. And I hope you will come back. I hope you enjoyed it too.
Yeah, I did. It was fun. Sorry if I talked your ear off. I tend to drown.
Oh, that's what I wanted. I wanted to hear your opinions and the crazy stories and everything. And I think MMA media not only in Germany, but it's a bit flat. Everybody does the same. But people like you who witnessed those crazy times and were not necessarily fighters, also referees, I mean, matchmakers, that's who I want to have on this podcast, because those are different opinions and different visuals and different perspectives. I think that's what I want to have in this podcast. I want to be a bit different than the others.
Yeah, so, cool. Well, I'll get Michael to come on.
Oh man, that would be a dream.
6 weeks or so.
That would be a dream. That would be a dream.
Yeah, maybe with Oliver, so he can call him cheeky bastard again.
I think I'm gonna be busy that day.
You're not getting out of this, buddy.
Tatort Sport. Wenn Sporthelden zu Tätern oder Opfern werden, ermittelt Malte Asmus auf meinsportpodcast.de. Folge dem True Crime Podcast, denn manchmal ist Sport tatsächlich Mord. Nicht nur für Sportfans.
Das war also der zweite Teil des Interviews mit Ant Evans. Vielen Dank nochmal an Oliver Kopp, der das Ganze möglich gemacht hat. Ant war super spannend als Gast. Seine Geschichten waren der Hammer. Und ja, wenn es euch auch gefallen hat, dann lasst mich das bitte wissen. Ich bin @SebastianHackel bei Twitter und Instagram. Wenn euch dieses Interview gefallen hat, dann hinterlasst gerne auch 5 Sterne bei Apple Podcasts. Das tut nicht nur dem Podcast gut, sondern auch meinem Ego, ne? Wisst ihr Bescheid? Und ja, sagt mir gerne auch, ob wir des Öfteren Interviews mit englischsprachigen Gästen bringen können, wollen, sollen. Denn ich würde es sehr gerne machen. Ant ist mega nah dran gewesen an den UFC-Stars und das über eine Dekade lang. Ich denke, da sind Geschichten dabei, die sind ergreifend, teilweise atemberaubend, humorvoll sowieso. Und ja, ich würde das gerne einfach öfter machen. Ich weiß ja nicht, lasst es mich einfach wissen, wie eure Meinung dazu lautet. Das möchte ich damit sagen. Und ja, damit geht Episode 84 von Hackmans MMA Show erstmal zu Ende. Wir hören uns nächste Woche wieder. Und ihr bleibt mir bitte sicher, ihr bleibt bitte sauber und safe. So long, Hackman out.
Hackmans MMA Show mit Sebastian Hackel auf meinsportpodcast.de.
Wie viele Kaffees waren es heute schon? Kaffee spielt im Leben vieler eine sehr große Rolle. Und das nicht nur zu Hause oder im Café, sondern auch am Arbeitsplatz. Dafür gibt es Lavazza Professional. Kaffee am Arbeitsplatz, der genauso lecker schmeckt wie in eurem Lieblingscafé. Die perfekte Kaffeelösung für jede Art von Unternehmen. Klein, mittel, groß. Ihr habt auf jeden Fall einen Kaffee, der schmeckt. Die richtige Motivation für eure Arbeitstage. Alle Infos zu Lavazza Professional findet ihr auf lavazzapro.de mit allen Kaffeelösungen für euer Büro.